The Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Go to geico.com today.
Fantasy, you're in the home 6010. Focus. Fantasy. Fantasy Focus.
Waiver Wire Tuesday, Field Yates and Mike Clay hanging out with you. And remember, the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Century 21. Good morning, Michael. We have survived week one.
We have, and it was a long week one. We had Thursday football. We had all day Sunday, and not one, but two Monday night football games. And they were late.
They were late. Yeah, the 10:20 start, which almost felt like a 10:30 start because of overtime in game one, but a great way to finish off the weekend, particularly that first game. And NBD, but I'm still undefeated in all 30 of my fantasy leagues.
Yeah, sure.
Never
you are.
Lost.
Sure, yeah. Prove it.
I got
Show
receipts.
Some evidence.
Big day coming up today on the show. So what we're going to do today is it's sort of just Waiver Wire Tuesday. We just sort of weave it throughout the show, but we'll also, of course, recap last night's two games. We'll talk about some injury updates. We'll talk about the waiver wire ads of note. Plenty to get to, but we'll begin now with the brilliance of the Houston Texans star quarterback wide receiver duo. Of course, Monday Night Football and ESPN last had a doubleheader, and I guess we're not really starting with the brilliance of DeAndre Hopkins and Deshaun Watson because they do what they do, right? DeAndre Hopkins finds the end zone twice. Deshaun Watson has 30.7 fantasy points. Fun to watch here, Mike. It's just a quick moment of appreciation for two of the game's finest.
Yeah, there's not much to say about DeAndre Hopkins that we didn't say during the offseason, right? I mean, he was the consensus number one receiver off the board for a reason. He delivers two touchdowns. What can you say? He's an elite fantasy receiver. As for Watson,
was unbelievable. Sorry.
Yeah, as for Watson, I mean, I'm super pumped for him going forward. I mean, he scared me, of course, when he dove into the end zone and it flipped over. I tweeted something like, that was awesome, but don't do it again, please. Right. Like, we want you in lineups. I don't even have a ton of exposure because I wasn't taking quarterbacks that early, but we want to see him on the field. He delivered. He had a good matchup. He was our number one quarterback last week, so we're not totally surprised, but the sky's the limit. I mean, his great 2018 season was overshadowed because Patrick Mahomes was so fantastic and kind of blew the doors off the league, but he is a much better supporting cast. It starts with, you know, obviously Laremy Tunsil at left tackle. I know he got beat last night. Fine, whatever. The one time the guy timed the snap and beat him, it wasn't even fair. But healthier, better at wide receiver. Jordan Akins in year two. Duke Johnson, out of the backfield. He could really explode onto the scene this year.
Okay, so let's get right to the backfield, Mike, because you're right. There's not much to say about DeAndre Hopkins.
I said a lot anyway.
And also Deshaun Watson. One thing I'll say is just like, I hope you stay healthy, Deshaun Watson. You're right. You don't need to dive for the pylon. You don't need to go after tackles after you throw an interception that was going to be nullified anyways because of a defensive offside. You don't need to take as many hits as you do, which a lot is on the offensive line. Let's get to the backs, though, Mike, because that is the important part here with the running backs last night. Duke Johnson, as you mentioned, his first game with the Texans, also Carlos Hyde. Carlos Hyde, sort of the forgotten man, right? He was on his fourth team since the start of the 2018 season, of course. The Browns, the Jaguars, the Chiefs, and now the Texans. Here was the snap share last night. 39 for Duke Johnson, 20 for Carlos Hyde. The context is this. Although the Texans did have a 14-3 lead going into the first half, or at the end of the first half, where they, you know, this game became very competitive, became very high-flying in the second half. So it was more of a quote-unquote Duke Johnson-type game than what would be a normal first and second down back, whether it's Carlos Hyde or not. I would ask this. More encouraged by one of those backs or the other? Surprised by one of those backs versus the other? What was your read on this backfield?
I think it went about as expected, except for maybe more efficiency than expected, right? So Carlos Hyde averaging 8.3 yards per carry, not exactly expected, but for me, you have to consider forward, right? That what he did last night doesn't really matter. Going forward, you would expect him to handle early down duties, goal line work, short yardage, and average around, again, in the 11 to 13 carries a game, and average about 40 yards per carry. But he's not going to do much as a pass catcher. So he might score 6, 7, 8 touchdowns if he continues to play a similar role, but he's not going to see more than one or two targets. That's going to limit him to maybe borderline flex value in non-PPR leagues. PPR leagues, no more than a bench play right now. Duke Johnson, you mentioned the snap split. We expected that and with Hyde just joining the team. That should probably be similar going forward. Because as mentioned, the offense is much better. And this is not again, I think I said this the other day on Fantasy Football Now or somewhere. This is not your older brother's Texans team. They're not nearly as good defensively anymore. This is, I think, going to be a pass-friendly, offensive-based football team. And Duke Johnson's going to be a big part of that, certainly when they're throwing the ball.
So a couple of things here. I agree with a lot of what you said there. Carlos Hyde looked better than I think a lot of us expected him to, right? I mean, he was sort of left for dead after being traded from Kansas City. Many thought he'd be cut. I think that, this is going to be tough to decipher week to week, and I hate to use this term all the time, but kind of game flow dependent, right? If you think the Texans are going to be winning a game, doing so handily, like, I don't know, let's say they play the Dolphins one week, I would feel pretty good about Carlos Hyde. I think in an all things being equal world, they want Carlos Hyde to be their workhorse back or the more predominant ball carrier.
Yes.
But when they play games that are competitive, and I think the Texans are a pretty darn good team last night, but I think they have an offensive line that could undo them in a lot of games also, then yeah, Carlos Hyde is going to have to share duties with Duke Johnson. But I would just say this is that, like, going into last week, I ranked Duke Johnson as, like, a pretty solid flex play. I think maybe I have a little bit less, like, I thought there was, like, I think the most optimistic view for Duke Johnson was, like, a top 20 running back. Not there for me anymore after last night. Maybe it was never there in the first place, though.
Yeah, I want a few more targets. He had 5 in that game, and I'm worried Deshaun Watson's going to be able to just push it downfield. He has 4 wide receivers. Once Kiki Huitt's back, you know that Hopkins is going to demand a lot of targets. So I'm a little nervous that he doesn't have quite that catch ceiling that he did at his peak in Cleveland. So I'm with you. I think he's caps out as like a flex in PPR. Again, Hyde, I feel best with him on benches right now.
So besides DeAndre Hopkins, the Texans have actually a pretty talented wide receiver core when healthy. Will Fuller, who had a remarkable catch last night. Kenny Stills is good, right? I know that he was sort of viewed as a throw-in in that trade with an involved Laremy Tunsil because of things he had said with the Dolphins and specifically aimed towards owner Stephen Ross. He's good, though, and he had a touchdown last night. That was his, I mean, he's been with the team for like 5 hours, right? So that was actually more than many expected from him. Kiki QT will eventually be back in the fold, perhaps as soon as this upcoming week, Mike. So does any of them have fantasy value week to week right now that you can count on?
Yeah, I think it's Will Fuller, and you may be able to get him maybe at a discount this week if you're exploring trades or maybe waivers in shallow leagues, because he did have that one long catch, but he only had 3 targets, and that might scare some people off. So I think, he played 98% of the snaps. He played the same number of snaps as DeAndre Hopkins. He has cemented himself, I think, as the number 2. Remember, he's first-round pedigree. Injuries have been the problem. The guy has produced as a wide receiver, too, when he's healthy. So I'm really excited for him now. I feel better about him. I would want him in my lineups. Behind him, though, Kenny Stills actually played fewer snaps than DeAndre Carter. And you might say, well, he's only been with the team 5 hours. The problem is Kiki Huitt is going to be back soon, and he looked tremendous last season. So he's going to be a big factor as well. Kenny Stills, not a guy I'm rushing out to sign right now in a fantasy league.
The way they used Stills last night, they did 2 separate of what I guess they're calling kind of tap passes, where the quarterback takes a shotgun snap, the wide receiver is zooming across the line of scrimmage or across the formation, and it's really a handoff, but it counts as a pass and a catch for fantasy purposes. Be interesting to see if Kenny Stills continues to utilize or is used in that way, or whether that might eventually become a Kiki QT role. On the Saints side, Mike, I kind of like the Saints for this reason. You kind of know what you're going to get from them week to week, especially when they're at home. Alvin Kamara, he was marvelous last night. Mike Thomas, also amazing. Drew Brees, also really good at home. All of them above 20 fantasy points. But where the intrigue, I think, lies, Mike, is 2 things. 1, Latavius Murray is good and is in a good role as well. That right there was solidified. I think there was some hope that he would not necessarily be Mark Ingram from last year, but that he could be Mark Ingram light. And we kind of got that last night. I thought that he ran hard, obviously, had a beautiful touchdown run, and a total of 8 total touches last night for Latavius Murray. Kind of cemented himself as, like, if not, he might be the best running back, well, him or James White or Sony Michel, however you want to view the Patriots backfield. Like, in terms of teams that can use 2 running backs per week, the Saints are right up there near the top. They have fantasy value.
And here's the best part. The game script was not good or as expected.
Yeah.
They were the Saints were 6.5 point favorites at home. We expected them to be able to run the ball a lot after, say, the first or second quarter. It didn't go that way. And still, he finds the end zone and pushes for, you know, 8, what'd you say? He had 8 touches, excuse me, in this game. And honestly, going forward, they're a really good team. They're going to win a lot of games. They're going to be ahead. He's going to play more than 28% of the snaps. I mean, Alvin Kamara played 75 because they were in comeback mode. They needed their best pieces on the field throughout that game. And in fact, we're going to talk about the receivers, the third receiver on the field more than usual as well. So, Kamara, they don't want him playing 75% of the snaps. That number is going to go down forward. They've said as much. That's good news for Murray. His fantasy stock is only on the rise.
So a good first start for Latavius Murray fantasy-wise, even when the number of snaps suggested it might have been a little bit of a slower start for him. The wide receivers, Mike, you're right, because beyond Michael Thomas, there's intrigue, right? If a number two pass catcher in New Orleans emerges and does so consistently, that's really good. So Jared Cook, 2 for 37 on 3 targets. There are very few tight ends that do awesome things every single week, right? I mean, it's just a fact. So I'm not saying to you that, like, hey, if you drafted Jared Cook to be your starting tight end, you need to cut bait. Like,
yeah.
He's going to be involved in an awesome offense. He's going to have some weeks like this. He's going to have some big weeks. But the 2/3 or maybe 3/2 wide receivers that you're kind of interested in are Tre'Quan Smith and also Ted Ginn. Ted Ginn, longtime friend of the podcast. Ginn, 7 catches for 101 yards last night, Mike. Is he the clear-cut guy over Tre'Quan Smith, who had 2 catches for 26 yards, plus a nice touchdown?
Yeah, I feel like it wouldn't be a post-week one waiver wire without talking about Ted Ginn. Because every year we're like, hey, he's too old, he's not going to do anything. The next young up-and-comer wide receiver is going to take his job. And sure enough, here we are, 33-year-old Ted Ginn catches all 7 of his targets, 101 yards. He was on the field for 74% of their snaps. Not a major edge over Tre'Quan Smith, but he's the number two still. He got the target volume. This is a great Saints offense. Certainly, he's on the flex radar right now. As for Tre'Quan Smith, again, 63% of the snaps, only 2 targets. He scored a touchdown. I'm not going to overreact to him on waivers. You have a lot of options to pick up. He's not going to get consistent enough volume to be on the flex radar right now. So he is what he was coming into the season. He goes on your bench. He's more like a handcuff than he is a guy with standalone value.
There's time still for Tre'Quan Smith. There's time.
It's definitely.
May not be right this moment. Ted Ginn. Fast does not fade, Mike. Him and DeSean Jackson are evidence that fast does fade. The late game, which was played out in Oakland, was a victory for the Oakland Raiders, who have gone through a lot over the past week. Nice to see them to pull it together. 24-16 is the final. Let's begin in Denver, and good for you, Emmanuel Sanders. Good for you. 5 catches, 86 yards, plus a touchdown. First game back after that Achilles tear. It looked really solid last night, given how much he was dealing with, what, some 9 months ago. Cortland Sutton, his running mate, 7 for 120. Now, Sutton was a player that I thought maybe I was looking through him this morning to see if I needed to make him an add to the waiver wire column. Not, you know, I think he was a player that was certainly discussed a bunch this preseason, but it was like, you know, sometimes the public doesn't listen to everything that is being said. This guy's certainly on the radar, and he's available in only about 20% of leagues, Mike. Nice little coming out party for Cortland Sutton last night.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think he showed us that he's their new number one receiver. And there was some speculation that'd be case during the offseason. It kind of tempered down once Emmanuel Sanders got back to full health. But it seems like it doesn't matter. I mean, they took Sutton in round 2 last year. The expectation was he would be their future number one. That will be the case, I think, going forward. He looked terrific. He was on the field for team high in snaps, 91% of the wide receiver snaps. He delivered the goods, obviously, in the box score. He had a mid-round ADP. It was a guy, I don't think he got a lot of hype because we were talking about so many young players in the offseason, but he was just kind of like those. You're up in your draft in the middle rounds. He is a little upside. He's the top guy on your board. You just take him, and he's probably started out in your bench. And now that may pay off in a big way. Would not surprise me at all if he ends up as a top 20 receiver. And by the way, really quick on Sanders, you mentioned it. Terrific game, 88% of the snaps. You like that. His game kind of went how we thought a season would go, right? Like quiet first half, comes back from the injury, explodes in the second half. He did that all last night. He had a quiet first half and then exploded in the second half. He's right back in fantasy starting lineups.
Sure, although a difficult matchup ahead this week against the Chicago Bears. I would like to fade as many Broncos as I can.
Yeah, it's sort of. Yeah, Vic Fangio at home. It's in Denver. Denver is money at home. Like their record, I don't have it off the top of my head, but their early season record at Mile High Stadium is unbelievable. It doesn't matter how bad or good they are. So
might have to adjust my week 2 rankings accordingly.
I think the early line's like even too.
Is it really?
So, yeah, it's really close.
Ooh.
It's really close.
Yeah. Couple of teams 0-1. No one wants to go 0-2 early on because those two teams both, I mean, certainly the Bears, but the Broncos think they're going to be a playoff team this year. The backfield was interesting, Mike, only because Royce Freeman had a disappointing rookie year relative to the fantasy expectations we had, but the Broncos still were encouraged and they still think he's going to be a big part of their offense this season. Here was the line last night, 10 for 56 for Royce Freeman, plus 11 for 43 for Phillip Lindsay, which included 4 catches for 23 yards. Just feels like, Mike, even if, and I know you were not anti-Phillip Lindsay going into the year, but there were some notable statistics that maybe stood out to you that gave you a bit of pause. I think the big thing for Phillip Lindsay is relative to Royce Freeman. he can play more in more situations, and one of them has passing down value, and one of them pretty much does not.
Yeah, I'm worried Freeman is very much like, you know, we talked in the earlier game about Latavius Murray or perhaps Carlos Hyde.
Yeah,
exactly. In that sort of role where he's not going to get passing down work, and that's going to just, it's going to bother you on a week-to-week basis because he might score a touchdown here or there and get the goal line work, and okay, fine, it's a fine week. But he ends up having a rough day where he has 12 carries for 36 yards, no touchdowns, and one target for 4 yards. You know, like, I think you're going to get a lot of those games with Freeman. He still was out-targeted by Phillip Lindsay. He's still the one. Lindsay looked better, I thought, even though Freeman had that nice run in the second half and ended up with pretty decent rushing efficiency. But Lindsay's just more, excuse me, more dynamic, and the passing down back, because Devontae Booker didn't play at all. I mean, if Lindsay handles all passing down duties, that's going to be huge for his fantasy value and could allow him to get back in that RB2 mix.
Just a reminder that Theo Riddick is out for the first 8 weeks of the season. He's been placed on IR, and the team actually doesn't have to designate him to return. Like, they don't have to make that decision right away. So no player has actually been designated as an IR candidate to return. Mm-hmm. That'll happen later on in the year. The Raiders, as we said, they win, and actually a pretty solid showing from some of the Raiders last night, Mike. I wasn't surprised that the energy was really good for Oakland. And probably the biggest star of the evening, well, a couple of them, Josh Jacobs.
Your ride or die, NFL right?
My guy. I've been talking about him all offseason. Josh Jacobs, 23 rushes, 85 yards, 2 touchdowns, plus 1 catch for 28 yards. Not wet blanket time, Mike, but encouraged, discouraged, like, or maybe like somewhere in the middle.
I want to say encouraged, but this was almost exactly as expected. I mean, you can't count on 2 touchdowns, obviously, from Josh Jacobs,
right.
But he played 72% of the snaps. It was a very good game script, of course, because they took an early lead and led throughout. Jalen Richard only played 17% of the snaps. That number's usually going to be higher, but
yeah.
They don't have anyone else to carry the ball. I mean, this is what we talked about the last couple of weeks. Ever since Doug Martin went on IR, it's like, unless they bring somebody in, I mean, Jacobs is going to get almost all of the carries, and that was exactly the case in this game. I know the yards per carry doesn't look great, but his efficiency was fine. I mean, it would have been lower if he wasn't making up yards on his own.
But that's the thing that makes me a little bit nervous, Mike.
What, taking the hits?
Well, I know they had 2 starting guards that were out yesterday, right? Yeah. Gabe Jackson's out because of injury, and Richie Incognito is out because of his suspension, which is one more week. So I just kind of wish there was a little bit more push for an offensive line that features perhaps the best center in football in Rodney Hudson, a 400-pound right tackle, or, you know, 350-pound right tackle, Trey Brown, who's huge. He's a behemoth, right? Mm-hmm. Colt Miller, first round pick last year. Like, I think I was kind of hoping, and I know it's one game, but I was hoping for a few more, you know, like, yards created for Josh Jacobs than we saw last night. I'm not super nervous, just, you know.
Yeah, that's fair.
Nice to see.
That's fair. But again, we know he had the best missed tackle rate in this class. We know he can produce after contact. We saw it last night. I don't know how many times they saw, like, there's 2 yards given to him. He gets 6, you know, like, over and over.
Well, he clinched the game with, basically milked the clock with, like, a powerful, just like, leg churning run. So that was good.
Yeah. There's that. And volume is king in fantasy football. He is going to push for upward of 20 carries a lot of weeks.
Right. We know that he is clearly the guy in Oakland, as too is Tyrell Williams. Mike, good player, like a player that just because of where he played previously, never got the opportunity to flourish in the way that he did last night. He came into this game when he got 8 or more targets, he averaged more than 15 fantasy points per game. Well, he needed just 7 targets to get to 22.5 fantasy points. He had an opening drive touchdown, did Tyrell Williams. He had 6 catches for 105 yards and a touchdown, too. Mike, good to see the efficiency. Good to see the volume of snaps. Good to see the volume of targets. This is a player that, by the way, plays a Chief this week. I think pushes for top 25 wide receiver this season.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Again, over 105 yards. He was delivered the ball deep downfield as well. 17.6 average depth of target in this game. He's not going to catch 6 out of 7 targets when he's getting so many deep bombs, but as long as he's converting a lot of them and getting 6 to 8 targets per game, including a couple bombs, I mean, he's going to deliver as a fantasy starter. I think he's a wide receiver, too, going forward in this offense.
Yeah, really interesting to see how this offense operated last night. Derek Carr was razor sharp in terms of accuracy. Like, you know, it was 22 for 26. I mean, it was like this is a pretty precision passing game last night. I was impressed.
And we shouldn't be shocked by that, considering, again, something we talked about throughout the offseason. He had the best off-target rate in the NFL last season.
Sure.
And he was conservative because he didn't have great weapons.
Lowest air yards per attempt, I believe, for Derek Carr.
But again, he didn't have good weapons. And he still had the best off-target rate in the NFL. So I think he's gone from kind of overrated at sort of his peak, if you will, that and when he was making that MVP run, a little overrated at that point, but now he's maybe underrated because he's been playing really well.
One more player that Eric Carabell's been talking about since at least March, Darren Waller, just had a monster season, a monster offseason in the eyes of Eric, and had a good start to the season. 7 catches for 70 yards on 8 targets. Darren Waller, big athletic former wide receiver at Georgia Tech. He's been through a lot in the NFL, multiple suspensions, played with the Ravens, ended up in Oakland, and no, just kidding. Matthew, of course, has been singing his praises throughout the offseason, very confident in Waller the Baller, as he calls him, and looking smart after one night. Darren Waller is a guy that, you know, probably figures in as the number two pass catcher in the Oakland Raiders offense, and when I'm looking at tight ends, I think the golden goose is when you have a player that is going to lead his team in targets and is very good. Maybe that's a guy like Evan Engram beyond the obvious top three. Maybe George Kittle will be the most obvious one. But then Darren Waller, or you're looking for a tight end that could be a top two target share guy. And it feels like Darren Waller is the, whether it's him lining up as a tight end or a wide receiver, is going to be the number two part of this passing game.
Yeah, John Gruden kind of brought Jared Cook back to life last season. He said his offense runs through the tight end. He's talked up Darren Waller all offseason. You mentioned he's a converted receiver, and it showed last night. He's going to be a huge part of this offense. I think he's a fringe, maybe even a lock to be a top 10 tight end going forward as long as he's healthy. And here's the key number, 100. He played 100% of their offensive snaps. It's hard to fail on fantasy at tight end if you're playing every snap.
If you already have him in season long, you are feeling very good about Darren Waller. If you missed him in season long, but you want to have him in your weekly lineups for daily fantasy, Mike, you can do that on DraftKings.
Yes, you can. And speaking of DraftKings, that was a good lead-in.
Thank you. I still know you were like, to let us know. You're like, yeah, that was a good one.
Well,
you're like, yeah, we get it,
Mike,
Field. That was good.
It was so good that I was scintillated that I forgot what I was doing.
Scintillated. Wow.
You like that?
That was good. That was a big word.
Big word. If you want to win big money in week number two, well, week one is in the books, but DraftKings isn't finished celebrating with some huge fantasy football contests. For week two of the football season, DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football, is giving new users a free shot at over $1.5 million in prizes with your first deposit when you visit DraftKings.com/FFF. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every run, throw, and catch means more with a DraftKings lineup on the line. It's simple. Just draft your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Plus, all new users and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500. That's some extra cash to play with this football season. Nothing adds to the sweat of watching the game quite like having a shot at over $1.5 million in prizes. So here's what you do. Head over to DraftKings.com/FFF right now. For a limited time, all new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500, plus new users who sign up at DraftKings.com/FFF will get a free shot at over $1.5 million in prizes with your first deposit. That's DraftKings.com/FFF. For all new and existing users to claim your special offer, only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Deposit bonus requires a 25 times playthrough. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Interesting, Mike. You do a DraftKings league at all for this podcast or no?
What's that? Say
you
that
do
again?
A DraftKings league at all for this podcast? Maybe a DFS podcast you're familiar with?
Yes, we do have a DFS podcast, that one Daniel Topp. You may have heard of him.
Oh, yeah.
We do on Fridays.
That's right, I heard about that.
And we actually, listen, we don't want to pat ourselves too hard on the back because we too could be a disaster, but we crushed it, man. I mean, we were in like the 88th percentile with our optimal lineups.
Yeah.
And just everything we talked about.
We opened up a couple of free leagues to be able to play against some listeners. So make sure you check Mike and I's Twitter handles towards the end of the week. We will send out links if you want to play against us in DraftKings. Totally free. No money required. And yeah, I mean, I was 13th out of 200 people. Mike, you were in the top 25, top 30, something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Daniel's better than Mike at fantasy.
I didn't mean it like that. It just came out that way, but that's not what I meant.
You meant it that way when you were texting me.
I mean, it's just the numbers don't lie.
Yeah, well, nonetheless, we had a great week. We'll see if we could do it again. It was just a lot of homers. But yeah, we'll do that Friday again.
And, yeah.
That podcast, by the way, it'll fold right into the Fantasy Focus feed. So if you already download and subscribe, you may have missed it over the weekend in case you don't check your podcast as frequently because you're not expecting them. Expect one every Saturday. DFS Roundup by Mike and Daniel. All right, time for some injury updates because a lot of players unfortunately got banged up in week one. Now, Stefania will have plenty more information on the specifics of these injuries tomorrow, but we're going to sort of put them on the radar because there might be some action involved to them, specifically with waiver wires tonight. Darius Geis had an MRI on his right knee. Sounds like going to miss time. Mike, there's going to be two Redskins running backs that all of a sudden see more work, or maybe just one. The other one just stays busy. Mm-hmm. But let's begin with Chris Thompson. Chris Thompson led the team with 7 catches and 10 targets in week one. They are going to have a difficult time running the football in a lot of weeks. It does not get easier necessarily for the Redskins. And I get it. The Eagles are a fantastic run defense. And no surprise that they struggled this past week. But Chris Thompson is one of those players, sort of Ted Ginn, right? Like every year, here we are, week one. It's a reminder. Oh, yeah, Chris Thompson probably will have like, you know, 80 catches over the course of the season. Now, if they have games where they're blowing teams out, maybe not. But they're probably not going to blow many teams out this year. Chris Thompson, a player that should stand to be busy going forward every single week.
Yeah, I was a little nervous because I told known Redskins fan Matthew Berry that the Redskins were going to be one of the worst teams in the league this year, and then they're beating the Eagles 17-0 right away.
No,
so
how about that?
That's my team, of course, so that wasn't looking too good. But, of course, that game turned around fast. And you're right, Thompson, 10 targets last week. In fact, he has a total of 18 targets in his last two games. So we know, again, when he's on the field, he plays a big role in this offense. He has a history of providing flex value. He was RB28 in both 2016 and 2017, was beat up obviously last season. I have him ranked RB30 right now for this week. I think he'll do enough as a pass catcher and see a half a dozen or so carries. That's going to allow you to, you know, produce, we'll say, flex numbers in 12 team leagues, maybe borderline in 10 teamers. So, I do think Thompson, and we'll talk about the other half of this, this backfield in a second, but I think Thompson is the preferred choice over, of course, Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, so Adrian Peterson is the other half of this, Mike. And listen, Adrian Peterson was a healthy scratch for the first time in his career this past weekend. First time in 13 seasons. It caused, reportedly, some frustration amongst other Redskins veterans. And I saw a lot of people, some very, very well-reported people that cover the Redskins day-to-day who suggested, like, you know what? The players aren't wrong, right? I mean, like, I get it. Adrian Peterson has a limited skill set, right? He does not contribute on special teams, and you thought that Darius Geis was going to be your guy. But this is a massively respected veteran in the locker room and a guy who sort of carried the running game last season when they had nothing else going for them. He had the 5th most carries in the NFL last season, Mike. 6th highest percentage of his team's carries and rushing yards last year. Like, so he was a workhorse for the Redskins on the ground last season. Adrian Peterson is going to be involved for as long as Darius Geis is out. Now, there are going to be some games where he's going to have 20 yards rushing because they're going to get down early, or he's going to have inefficient games because teams know that if they can stop Adrian Peterson, they're going to be okay. But if you're looking for somebody that is going to see potentially 20 carries in a game, Adrian Peterson's about as good of a bet of a player that is available right now in nearly 3/4 of leagues on ESPN.com.
Yeah, no doubt. I mentioned I have Thompson RB30 this week against the Cowboys. I have AP31, so behind him.
Right,
so it's very close. I think these two guys are both going to be involved, obviously. It's an obvious thing to say. You mentioned 50 carries last year. He also averaged 4.2 yards per carry, which you don't want to get too caught up in yards per carry, but he was facing heavy boxes, and that's over a large sample. That tells you something. Obviously, it's better than 3.3. He was perfectly fine last year. He was effective. Also scored 8 touchdowns and finished as a top 20 running back. The problem is he only had 26 targets for the season. He's not going to be involved as a pass catcher. He only had 3 top 20 fantasy weeks after week 4. So you kind of touched on the issue, right? He's going to have some duds. He's not going to, you know, I just mentioned he's not going to catch many passes. For me, he levels out as a flex option, right? And especially more valuable in non-PPR and PPR leagues. I don't feel great starting him unless I'm a little shaky at running back.
I have a ton of respect for Adrian Peterson. Future Hall of Famer, obviously. Best running back of the past 18 years, 15 years, whatever it is, right? That being said, Mike, you know, they don't award you points for second place in fantasy football, right? It's rare that he's going to be a staple of a winning week in fantasy because there's so many limitations on his game. Can't catch or fairly
not utilizing that
catching
way.
The ball. Beyond that, like, this Redskins offense, offensive line right now is still starting Donald Penn and Eric Flowers. So, I think if I had to roster one of those two, I would be looking towards Chris Thompson. Tevin Coleman, speaking of other running back injuries, has an ankle sprain. He is considered week to week right now, unlikely for week 2. Matt Breida, sort of like the Teflon man, right? He finds a way to be out there every single Sunday and play through pain. Mike, do we think that Matt Breida immediately leaps into like a top 20 play should Tevin Coleman miss extended time?
RB23 for me this week.
Okay.
So that's where I have him. So
like
close.
It.
Yeah. Yep. Early ranks anyway. We'll see. We'll continue tweaking those. But for now, he's a borderline top 20 guy. Certainly at back end RB2 in 12 team leagues and a flex in 10 teamers. 5.3 yards per carry last season was seventh best in the NFL. I mean, he showed off that efficiency. The red flag with him has been really poor post contact production. His career, yards after contact per attempt is 1.62. So that makes you a little nervous, but he is explosive enough to find himself some lanes. He also was much more effective as a pass catcher last year, actually the fifth best catch rate and third best yards per target among running backs. So you'll like to see that as well. So a little undersized, doesn't get goal line work, 5 rushing touchdowns, 7 carries inside the 5 in his career. And also keep in mind the snap split. Now Breida and Tevin Coleman were pretty close in snaps before Coleman went down. Breida ends up with 26 snaps, but reserve Raheem Mostert, 18 snaps. And I think
good.
Yeah, and I think we're probably going to see someone called up from the practice squad.
Sounds
Jeff
like
Wilson.
Jeff Wilson, yeah.
Yeah, and he, I mean, he had one of the runs of the preseason. Man, that guy has a little juice in him as well. So
he can catch the ball.
Yeah, we could see 3 guys seeing the ball here, but I think Breida is the preferred choice. Do you go get him on waivers if he's out there? Yes, you do, and I think you can use him in your flex.
Weird start for San Francisco to the season. Weird, mm-hmm. right? Like, just ineffective against a bad Bucs defense. Keep my eye on San Francisco this week. A lot of people are wondering, you know, who is going to emerge besides George Kittle as a weekly fantasy asset in that offense?
Yeah, no doubt.
We're going to take a quick break. On the other side of that, waiver wire ads. It is time, people. We're bringing back the waiver wire column for 2019.
Fantasy, you're in the hole, 6-0-1-0.
If you're watching us right now on the video or the live stream somewhere, you may have noticed a feature from the Fantasy Show featuring Matthew Berry and Daniel Dobbin. Great to see all those players that randomly scored a bunch of fantasy points. My favorite one was Alex Arma, a former college defensive end who now plays fullback for the Panthers, who had a 1-yard touchdown run that should have gone to Christian McCaffrey.
Vultures.
Waiver wire column is something that I write. It usually goes up on Monday afternoon. It's updated by Tuesday morning, so in case anything happens in that Monday night game that moves the needle. And there were a couple of players that we talked about that did move the needle last night, including Carlos Hyde and Darren Waller. So let's get to these waiver wire ads and note that some of the players that we have already discussed in this podcast are also on this column. Chris Thompson, Adrian Peterson, Darren Waller, etc., amongst others. But for now, the Bengals are going to have to lean on Giovanni Bernard because Joe Mixon may miss some time this week, possibly. We'll see. We don't know for sure, but he's banged up. He left the game in week 1, did not return. Giovanni Bernard played 63% of Cincinnati's offensive snaps in week 1. He also recently received a contract extension. Zach Taylor likes this player, Mike, and if you figure that Joe Mixon does not play this weekend, Giovanni Bernard's going to have the following things working in his favor: workload, better offensive system, and talent. I think Giovanni Bernard's in play for a top 25 week this week against San Francisco.
No question about it. And all we have to do is look back to last season. There were 2 weeks that Joe Mixon was out. And here is what Gio Bernard did in those games.
Okay.
27 carries, 130 yards, 3 rushing touchdowns, caught 9 of 12 targets for 52 yards, was RB6 during those 2 weeks. Yeah. And that's his history, right? When the starter's been out, whether it's Jeremy Hill or Joe Mixon or whatever it is, he is delivered as a fantasy starter. There's no reason to expect anything different. They have they drafted Rodney Anderson. He's on IR. They drafted Travion Williams. He was out last week with an injury. I don't know if he'll be back this week. And their next option is Samaje Perine, who was cut by the Redskins.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be him. He's going to handle a bulk of the snaps as he did this past week when Mixon went out. No question, he should be ranked as a fantasy starter if Mixon is out.
Malcolm Brown for the Rams played 19 snaps in week 1. Todd Gurley played 51, but he got sort of the golden carries, Mike, the goal line work. So I'm mentioning him more because Todd Gurley is rostered in 100% of leagues. Malcolm Brown needs to be rostered in a significantly higher number than 6.5% of leagues. Clearly, if you have Todd Gurley, you should be angling for Malcolm Brown. But if you don't have Todd Gurley, I might still be angling for him because if something happens to Gurley, and we already have a lot of reason to be concerned, Malcolm Brown, I think, would probably end up being like a top 15 running back play.
Yeah, no question about it. But here's the thing. Brown should be added. He's a great target on waivers. He should be on benches, but he should not be started right now. And here's why. He played 26.4% of their snaps. That's not enough. I mean, he's not going to do much as a pass catcher. We know that. They actually only targeted the running backs once in this game, I believe. It was to Todd Gurley. That number will go up, but again, Brown's not going to be featured in that way. That's going to be Gurley, and that's going to be Darrell Henderson if they need a second option. But I would say this. Gurley, I would stay the course for now. At the very minimum, he's a good RB2. He played 51 snaps in this game, only 19 for Brown. He was effective, obviously, as a rusher. So as long as the targets come, which I would think they will in the coming weeks, I think Gurley will settle in as a good fantasy running back.
What do you got for us, Daniel? A question from behind the glass.
I got a question. Obviously, I think Darrell Henderson was drafted in far more leagues than Malcolm Brown was. So if you drafted Henderson, just free and clear to 100% drop him and add Malcolm Brown in his place. Like, forget the draft capital, forget all of whatever. Like, that's how you guys see that running back.
If you had Todd Gurley and you drafted Darrell Henderson, I would drop him for Malcolm Brown right now.
No question. Henderson was always a horrendous value, like at his ADP anyway.
Right. He was way too high. It was, Tony Pollard without the Zeke concern, right? Like, is Tony Pollard also probably still drafted too high given how much steam there was for Zeke to be signing an extension before the year, which happened. But Darrell Henderson, yeah, too much. Third string running back for right now. Sometimes you do things that you kind of question. Sometimes you wonder whether it's even worth it. Sometimes you realize that you're getting way too far ahead of yourselves. And here I am telling you to add Ronald Jones. Mike, 13 rushes, 75 yards. Maybe the best game of his career, which is sort of sad. The guy was 37th overall, drafted 37th overall at USC last season. Ranked third in Tampa Bay running snaps. But 8 of his 13 carries gained at least 5 yards last week. That was good news. And Mike, it's just this, is that Peyton Barber, a guy. Ogunbowale, a guy. Third down guy, specifically. If there's any of these players that has, not even star potential, Mike, but like solid starter upside, it's Ronald Jones. And that's, so my as I wrote the waiver column, YOLO. You want to add somebody that might eventually hit, put him on your bench right now? Ronald Jones.
I don't even think it's YOLO. I mean, there's obviously a path to a huge role in this Bucs offense. They don't have an option, right? I mean Peyton Barber, and I mean, you mentioned those guys are Jags, whereas Ronald Jones was drafted in the second round to be a superstar NFL running back, and he might have it in him. I mean, the knock on him coming into the draft was his size. He came in, we were worried he was going to come in under 200 pounds. He added more weight this offseason. He still looks explosive. And by the way, he did, what do you have, 93 yards and 14 touches? He was third among their backs in snaps. I mean, he's not even the full-time back, and he still did that sort of damage. In fact, all of last season, he had 77 yards on 30 touches. You mentioned it was his best game. I mean, it was his best career so far. I mean, he's already outdone his previous career. So I think there's definitely upside here. I'm excited for him. Remember, when he was drafted last year, 20 and a half years old. Crazy young and small. He's still developing. It's not totally shocking. I mean, the offseason reports were certainly concerning, especially his struggles in the passing game. Definitely a red flag, but it's not shocking that he's taking a leap at his age.
All right, so I'm not saying this is necessarily my number one waiver wire target. If it has to be added in all leagues, etc., I would just say the player that I was most excited rewatching in week one was John Ross. 9th overall pick in the 2017 NFL draft. Left for dead after 2 seasons. There was rumblings at one point, Mike, that they wanted to turn him into a cornerback. He had played so poorly at wide receiver. The Bengals got an overhaul this offseason, offensively, the operation. And I'll be the first to admit it, I was hard on Andy Dalton during our Bengals preview, but in terms of encouraging signs, the Bengals looked like an NFL offense on Sunday. I get it, they lost, but if you go back and watch them and compare them to previous seasons, it is night and day. John Ross played 81% of the snaps for the Bengals. He had 2 touchdowns, and I get it. Tedrick Thompson made a bad play on the second long touchdown. But John Ross was drafted to be a star, Mike, and he finally looks like one. AJ Green's not playing anytime soon, but even when he does, maybe John Ross can still be a thing going forward.
Yeah, maybe. I'm a little nervous. I mean, can they support 3 top 25 receivers? I'm not sure because Tyler Boyd's really good at football. AJ Green, I've heard he's good. I'm told he's good anyway.
But who's the path, right? Zach Taylor is on the Sean McVay model, right? Yeah. And they have 3 wide receivers. Not that everybody can just be the Los Angeles Rams, but I expect to see a healthy percentage of 3 wide receiver sets.
Yeah, that's totally fair for sure. And no question, he's one of the top waiver ads. If you don't already have him, scoop him up. You mentioned the playing time, 12 targets. You'll like to see that. Last year, he had the 7 touchdowns, but the volume was low. It was a super high touchdown rate. It wasn't anything sustainable. This is sustainable to some extent. Now, his... OFP, so his expected fantasy point total. Obviously, he was way above that with the long touchdowns, but it was still ninth highest among receivers through the end of Sunday anyway, which tells you that he got enough volume and high value volume to allow, we'll say, borderline wide receiver one number. So for now, yes, he should be in lineups. I'm just a little nervous long term once Green is back about him getting consistent volume. But maybe the way he's built.
I was going to say, if he plays
speed,
well.
6 to 7 targets. Right. I mean, that's more than enough if he breaks some long touchdowns. 49ers this week. So definitely on the wide receiver 3 radar.
John Brown, another wide receiver named John, who's got plenty of speed for the Bills, had 10 targets.
Yep.
7 catches, 123 yards, and a touchdown for John Brown. A player the Bills like. They targeted. We talked about him yesterday on the show, Mike. Good to see him play a bunch of snaps. And it wasn't perfect. It was actually ugly in the first half. But Josh Allen looked very, very promising in the second half of that game and that comeback win against the Jets. John Brown could be on us up in there, up in Buffalo.
Yeah, I think the Bills were better than it seems because of the turnovers, right? That'll bite you sometimes. But they had a nice comeback there. 29% target share for John Brown in this game, 10 targets. It was only the 9th double-digit target game of his career, though. He's never cleared 6.8 targets in a season. So I'm not sure if we should really expect this to continue in his age 29 season. I consider him a wide receiver 4, just nervous about long-term heavy volume in this Bills offense.
They probably want to run the football more than they did. I think at one point they had like 0 rushing attempts. It felt like through maybe like the first quarter and a half. It was it was an odd game script for them.
It was a pass-heavy game plan, and you can see that even if you adjust for game script, and it makes sense, right? Where's the Jets' strength? The defensive line, where they're loaded. Where's their weakness? Cornerback depth.
Everything else,
they attacked it.
Sure. Last one here. A reminder that Fantasy Trends is brought to you by TD Ameritrade. And trending in the right direction is TJ Hockenson. Some call him the Lions tight end. Others call him Daniel's spirit animal. This guy looked like a star on Sunday, Mike. He had more receiving yards than any tight end making his NFL debut in the history of the National Football League. 100 years. He had 25.1 fantasy points on Sunday. Wonderful touchdown catch. We usually slow our roll with rookie tight ends, but this might be the exception here.
Yeah, and no drops, Daniel, right? No drops? That's new, right?
Did not drop any passes. It was a sight to behold. I'll tell you what, Mike Clay.
It was very impressive. On the field for 57 of their 80 snaps. Obviously, the volume boosted a little bit by an extra 10 minutes playing in through an entire overtime period. So keep that in mind when you're considering the numbers of Cardinals and Lions. They played an extra 10 minutes. Obviously, those numbers were boosted. But obviously, big volume for Hockenson. And I thought this was interesting. His average depth of target was 17.3. For perspective, the highest ADOT at tight end in the NFL last season was Gronk at 12.4.
Wow.
I mean, just way above it. Now, he's not going to keep up that sort of number, but the fact that they're using him downfield, giving him a lot of volume, offers him a lot of fantasy upside. By the way, his expected fantasy point total, his OFP, was 19. That was third at tight end. There's just really a lot to like. He's a must-add for sure this week.
One thing I'll say is that with next-gen stats tracking top speed, there are only so many opportunities in the course of a game where a player with the football actually gets a chance to reach top speed, right? Like, it either has to be a wide receiver who breaks past the defense or a running back who breaks through the line. That being said, the fastest ball carrier on the field on Sunday for the Detroit Lions was timed as TJ Hockenson. So the dude can scoot, even if his 40 times suggests that he was just, you know, above average athletically. The guy is an absolute freak athlete. We're in on him. Daniel is as well. The Lions remain undefeated, Daniel.
You bet they freaking do, Field.
Tell us about your beard and shaving it.
I'm going to do that.
Okay.
When I talk about Dollar Shave Club, I just can't stress enough the quality of their products, Field.
Agreed.
They've spent years developing, crafting, refining everything they have. And they have everything I use to look, feel, and smell my best. You name it, they have it, and we use it. I've been a Dollar Shave Club member for years. It's true, and as amazing as their shave stuff is, Dollar Shave Club is way more than just razors. Dollar Shave Club has you covered head to toe. Everything you need to shower, shave, style your hair, brush your teeth, and yes, even wipe your butt, Mike Clay.
How about that?
Why'd you direct that at me?
I'm just saying.
You're a dad.
And Dollar Shave Club can keep you automatically stocked up on the products that you use. You get what you want whenever you need it. Whether it's once a month or a few times a year, I know I never have to waste time going to the store wondering if what I'm going to get is any good. As a Dollar Shave Club member, I know what I'm getting is the highest quality. And right now, you can put that quality of Dollar Shave Club's products to the test. Their Ultimate Shave Starter Set has basically everything you need for an amazing shave. The Executive Razor, the Shave Butter, the Prep Scrub, and the Post Shave Do. The best part is, the Post Shave Do is dope, right?
Yep, agreed.
Use it all the time. The best part is, you can try it for just $5. After that, the restock box ships regular size products at regular prices. Get your Ultimate Starter Set for just $5 at dollarshaveclub.com/FFF. That's dollarshaveclub.com/FFF.
Good stuff there, Daniel. So let's get now into these young wide receivers that we believe are worth an ad, because, Mike, it was an exemplary week for rookie wide receivers making their NFL debuts. We're going to go back and forth and back and forth. We play a little game of ping pong. We begin with Hollywood Brown. He was unbelievable. He was targeted on 75% of his week one routes. He had 6 targets on 8 routes. He played 14 snaps. Most importantly, he had 2 touchdowns. 148 yards. So, is Mike, you are the king of regression and noting when things are not likely to sustain. Are you more on the side that this is the beginning of something really good for Hollywood Brown? Or are you more of the mind that, hey, be careful now, guys. That was, you know, the outlier, and the rest of the season will very much level off and do so probably precipitously.
Well, if he's going to play 12 to 15 snaps, yeah. I mean, he's not going to do anything close to this. In fact, if you start him this week and he ends up playing 12 to 15 snaps, you might get 0
right.
on the board.
Literally. Yeah.
He might get 4 targets and not catch any of them if they're deep shots, or he might get no targets in that sort of role. So, obviously he was tremendous. He's a must add on waivers. If you don't already have him, get him on your bench just in case his role evolves. But if there's no indication that he's going to play more snaps, you can't start him this week. In fact, his expected fantasy total was 10 and his actual was 31. That gap of 21 was second highest in the league in week one, behind only one Sammy Watkins, of course. So, it's just not something that's sustainable right now in his current capacity, but I don't want to, you know what I mean? I don't want to be too negative, because right. if the role increases, which you would think it would, and you know, he's not always going to play Miami every week, I know, but if he's on the field as an every down player, this guy was drafted in the first round for a reason, there's big upside, but you have to temper short-term expectations. Right.
I think most people that listen to this podcast and most that play fantasy football kind of understand where we're going to come from with this one, right? Mm-hmm. He's a talented dude. I mean, he is an incredible athlete, had an amazing career at Oklahoma. Awesome. Plenty of pre-draft buzz, first round pick. Guy that probably could have been drafted much higher than he was if not for a foot injury. That being said, it's just, you know, there's no way that you have 148 yards on 14 snaps every single week. And it's a passing offense that still, Mike, he was awesome last week. Lamar Jackson will still have to answer some of the critics going forward as a passer. But we like Hollywood Brown. We also like Terry McLaurin. Right up 405 or down the 405. Not good with geography. Anyways, he plays for the Washington Redskins. And Mike, 5 catches, 125 yards and a touchdown. Fewer fantasy points than Hollywood Brown, but I think if I were to have my chance to pick one of those two wide receivers up, I could make a case for Terry McLaurin, who played almost every snap for the Redskins on Sunday.
There's no doubt about it. I think that McLaurin has an excellent chance to be the top scoring fantasy wide receiver, rookie fantasy receiver this season.
Nice.
Not the fantasy overall receiver, yeah. Just a fantasy rookie wide receiver. Like you said, he played almost every snap here for the Washington Redskins, had 7 targets. He had 125 yards and a touchdown. If you watch that game,
should add more.
He should have had maybe 200 yards. He was beating that Eagles secondary. And again, he's not just a situational guy. Josh Doctson's gone. He played ahead of Paul Richardson. Trey Quinn is in the slot. He's going to do short area work. He is going to play a big role downfield. And remember, this guy has major speed, 4.35 speed, had the best yards per target in college last season among this incoming rookie class. So much to like.
Last thing I'll say, your anecdotal stuff, but incredibly mature. The kind of player that people drew like ridiculous comparisons in terms of how much, like how ready he was to be a professional athlete, whether he plays wide receiver or guard. The reason I mention that is that, like, yeah, some players are just overwhelmed by the moment. They're not prepared physically or mentally for week one. Terry McLaurin showed that in his NFL debut. A couple more here, Mike. Mecole Hardman, who, of course, with Tyreek Hill now out for some period of time, should step up. But, Mike, he played a ton of snaps in week one. He had the same number of targets as you and I combined. Nervous at all here, or are you more excited?
I'm excited because of the playing time, and I think the lead to targets.
Gotcha.
I think that's it. I mean, yeah, 46 snaps, trailed only Sammy Watkins, was also second in routes, too. Again, the thought was during the draft, they're not going to have Tyreek Hill. They're going to draft someone in round 2, very similar, right? And it makes sense, right? He's super undersized, but he has 4.33 wheels. He's strong. He actually killed it on the bench at the combine as well. Terrific with the ball in his hands. Red flags, drops, and fumbles. He had a ton of them last season. That concerns you for sure. But if he's on the field almost every pass play in this Chiefs offense, at any given point, he could go for a 70-yard touchdown with Pat Mahomes delivering a strike. So there's no doubt he would be of high priority on waivers.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that, you know, I had this conversation with Keith before the podcast, is that, like, is the reason why he had so few targets because he wasn't necessarily as prominently involved in the game plan. You know, I tend to side on the fact that, like, the guy's playing 80% of the snaps. Like, they have plans for him to get targets. It might just be an outlier week, though. So, second-round pick, as you mentioned, and pedigree, we know that much, and Patrick Mahomes. Enough said. One more here, Mike, is DJ Shark, second-round pick last year, not this past year, but the year before that. Very good measurables, had a slow start to his NFL career last season, but looked really good in his NFL, or I guess his second season, his debut then. 35-yard touchdown pass from Nick Foles, up near 150 receiving yards. Question for me is this. He's one of three wide receivers that saw some production in week one. It's a run-first offense. Are they going to be able to carry this, especially with the backup quarterback going forward?
Yeah, I spent a lot of time talking about these perimeter wide receivers for the Jags last week and over the past month. I mean, Chark is one of the most underrated breakout players in the league because it's perceived as a bad run-heavy offense. But, you know, he's 6'3", he has 4.3 wheels, he was a second-round pick last year. There were a lot of signs that he was going to make a leap. I'm a little nervous about the targets. He only had four in this game. It's going to be hard to sustain that, but... you know, him and Chris Conley are both going to play pretty tremendous roles. We'll see what happens at quarterback. No Nick Foles. We'll see if Gardner Minshew can keep up what he did in that first game. What a display. I mean, if you're in a two quarterback league or a deep league, a dynasty league, get Minshew on your bench and see if he keeps this up. Maybe he's the next, should I say Tom Brady on the air? Should I call him Tom Brady?
Can we get this headline video team? Can we clip this one?
Gardner Minshew is the next Tom Brady. Yes.
Better than Tom Brady, according to Mike Clay. He said that in the pre-show meeting. He just won't say it. He's too chicken to say it on air.
I just said it. So anyway, Chris Conley, the preferred ad, I think, on waivers because he has a clearer path to consistent targets and snaps. But Chark, like him on the bench, to potential breakout player this season.
Good stuff there, Mike. A reminder that hiring can be a slow process. Cafe Altura COO Dylan Miskowitz needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but he's having trouble finding qualified applicants. So he switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. So you get qualified candidates fast, like really, really fast. Mecole Hardman fast. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. And that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. What a great job that must be. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for all businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/06010. That's ZipRecruiter.com/06010. One more time for the people in the back, ZipRecruiter.com/06010. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. We bring it on home with a couple of social questions from our good pal, Keith.
Hey, guys. Alex wants to know, how do you view the wide receiver 2 battle in Pittsburgh? Encouraged by Moncrief's target share or discouraged by his inability to produce?
Dude, first week, a lot of hot takes here, Mike. Mm-hmm. Dante Moncrief looked like trash last week. And this is a player that we've always had high hopes for, right?
Mm-hmm.
Never pulled it together consistently. Here's what I would say. Discouraged by Dante Moncrief. Also, though, like, I don't think the Steelers view it as, like, it's a, like, either or for wide receiver 2. Like, I think they're going to play enough 3 wide receiver sets. They were rotating basically everybody besides Juju in there a ton on Sunday night. Johnny Holtman had a long target in the game. Like, it was a smorgasbord of wide receiver mixings there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And that Steelers team obviously underwhelmed in a big way. We expect them to bounce back. They set a franchise record for touchdowns last year. As good as Antonio Brown is, I mean, he's not moving the needle quite that far. They're back at home against Seattle this week. I think they'll bounce back. But Dante Moncrief, I was just pulling this up, OFP for this week. In my Fantasy 32, which goes up on Tuesdays, I put a leaderboard, and then the guys who are most over the head and the guys that most underachieved. Number one on the underachievement list based on his opportunity, Dante Moncrief, 19 expected fantasy points. He only put up 4, an ugly, ugly effort. What do you have, 10 targets, 6 yards? I mean, just unbelievable. I'm still in the camp of James Washington, good mid-round flyer. We need to see more snaps I think he ran fewer routes than Ryan Switzer. That's a red flag, but I think his role will just increase as the season goes on. He's the guy I want on my bench right now.
All right, Keith, what else you got for us?
Cameron wants to know, would you hold on to Justin Jackson or drop him for one of the upside wide receivers that you mentioned earlier, like Ross or Shark?
A little bit of a roster construction question, I think, because I think if you have Austin Ekeler, I would 100% keep Justin Jackson because you're one injury away from having a guy that could be a top 15 or 18 play. Otherwise, Mike, I'd be okay with it, especially if you need that wide receiver depth.
Yeah, especially if I was looking for a flex, I might want to go after Terry McLaurin. You know, if it's A.J. Brown, probably not so much. So right. It kind of depends on your needs and what your construction is. If Jackson's like your only back and maybe your shallow running back, you might want to hold tight on him. I think he'll have some better days as well. Ekeler just was crazy good.
Right, and Jackson ran well in week one, by
the
way.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah,
he was
long run, 6 for 40 plus another catch. Pretty solid day for Justin Jackson.
No.
Yeah, Kelvin says he's fielding offers left and right for Lamar Jackson, as we would expect.
Okay.
He says, where would you put him if you were ranking him for the rest of the season?
I'd say somewhere between quarterback 6 and 14 is my guess. That's a huge range, obviously. My point is that, like, wouldn't surprise me if he ended up with, like, a borderline top 5 season, Mike, or it wouldn't surprise me if, like, a lot of other quarterbacks who stumbled out the gates, there's so much depth there, right? So, like, off the top of my head, Patrick Mahomes, Carson Wentz, Matt Ryan, Tom Brady now with all those weapons, right? I mean, guys that were awesome, Deshaun Watson in week one. Drew Brees was really good last night, obviously better at home than on the road. Russell Wilson could be better than him. Kyler Murray was solid in week one. Like, there are a lot of good quarterbacks. So, yeah, like, if I can get a starter running back or wide receiver, I always pull the trigger.
Yeah, your range is totally fair. You should be fielding offers for him, just to keep in mind. They are home against an Arizona team that's going to have to travel all the way across the country.
Yeah.
That's going to run a fast-paced offense, generate a ton of plays for this Baltimore offense. Again, at home, he's set up for another nice week, too. So you might want to hold tight for a week. But again, you're right, especially after big weeks, you should always be exploring the trade market just to see what you can get. But I agree with you in that range. I think he's a mid-range QB one right now.
Keith, what else?
Last one here comes from Joe. Are both Colts tight ends droppable?
One is, I think.
I think Eric Ebron's droppable.
I would drop Ebron first. In fact, I was already dropping him before week one.
I love all the drop talk around Ebron, guys. I just
Ebron
want you
was
to
like, you can't drop me. I'm going to drop you first.
I think there was concerns as soon as Andrew Luck went down that he wasn't going to see enough volume in the touchdown department. That was a concern. So I think you can with him. Doyle played more, saw more routes. He's going to see more targets. I think he's the guy that's still a front end, tight end, too, that could have value. But if you want to drop Doyle and pick up a Waller or a Hockenson, that's totally fine.
Right. I guess it depends on what you're targeting. If you're targeting one of those two guys, both of them are easily droppable. Waller, Hockenson, obviously. He might be the most added player in fantasy football over this week. Thank you so much to our sponsors for today's shows, DraftKings Century 21, and also
Dollar Shave Club and ZipRecruiter,
all the people that helped make this show happen. We're back tomorrow with tons of injury updates with Star Fanya. Week one rankings. A reminder, waiver wire column is out. Week two rankings will be out on Tuesday as well. If you're still undefeated like me, holla! Peace out.
You're in the 06010. Never gonna hustle in case you didn't know. Matthew Berry, TMR.
You guys go ahead, give me grief for being on SportsCenter for 45 seconds.
I think you could do better than me, because I don't think you could.
Jail bait, field Yates.
You're terrible at hashtag improv.
At field Yates. At field Yates.
Stefania Bell.
Oh, don't let Berry convert you.
Secret squirrel, Daniel Dye.
Make it happen.
Mediocre fan.